On account of today being not even just an ordinary, if there is such a thing, an ordinary Yom HaShoah, but it marks the 80th anniversary of the Warsaw Ghetto Revolt. If you never really followed it, the choice of this date as Yom HaShoah, one of the last days in the month of Nisan, is actually in order to observe, as it were, the yard site of the Warsaw Ghetto. The Warsaw Ghetto Revolt having taken place over Pesach of 1943, so this does mark the 80th anniversary of it. It's not entirely unrelated to our theme of songs of the Chalutzim in the early state of Israel. It was my original intention to share this with you next week, because next Tuesday will be Yom HaZikaron, the Remembrance Day for fallen Israeli soldiers, and also the Eve Erev of Yom HaTzma'ot. We may in fact repeat this song next week. Next week it'll be a formal part of the curriculum. Now it's kind of extracurricular. But with that, what I'm going to do is actually, take a moment, I'm going to share a different screen with you. I'm going to share... Here we go. Let me just get this a little... Okay. I'm going to share with you a rendition of the Shir HaPartizanim, the Song of the Jewish Partisans. You'll hear the music in the background. You can see the words on the screen in front of you. It's not part, as I said, it's not part of this week's sources, because as I said, this week it's kind of extracurricular. But the words are here. The song was originally written as a poem in Yiddish. It was written by a young poet named Hirsch Glick, who was barely 20 years old at the time. He was killed by the Nazis barely a year or so after he wrote it, at the age of 22. It was then adapted to an existing tune. The existing tune having been written by two Jewish composers, who composed the tune not for this poem per se, but actually for a completely different purpose. But eventually somebody took this poem, which was originally written in Yiddish. You'll see the words shortly. The poem was written in Yiddish. The Hebrew is, of course, a later translation. And it was written by Hirsch Glick, who lived in the Vilna ghetto in 1943. And according to our best attempt at reconstructing its origins, he wrote it when he heard about the fall of the Warsaw Ghetto. So it eventually became, as it's called, as its title in Hebrew, is the Song of the Jewish Partisans. In Yiddish, as a poem, it had a different title. If you can see it on the screen in front of you, the title in Yiddish is actually taken from the first words of the poem, Zok nisht kein mol, don't ever say. And the theme of the poem, as you can see in the Yiddish, Zok nisht kein mol, as du gehst den letzten Weg. Never say that you're on the end of your journey. Never say that the journey is over. Essence, of course, the journey is life's journey. So, of course, the song itself was more of a hopeful one than not. And I'm just going to play in the background a rendition of these songs, both in Hebrew and in Yiddish. And that'll just simply be our acknowledgement for the solemnity of the day.
Dr. Sokolow, I'm not seeing the shared screen. I am seeing your screen, but it's your post-attendee Zoom screen with a bunch of tabs. I'm not sure what everybody else is seeing. There we go. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
על נטומר הנה דרכי האחרונה, את אור היום הסתירו שמי העננה, זה יום נחשפנו לו עוד יעל ויבוא, ומצעדנו עוד יראים אנחנו פה. זה יום נחשפנו לו עוד יעל ויבוא, ומצעדנו עוד יראים אנחנו פה. עמוד השחר על יומנו אור יהל, אם הצורר יחלוף תמולנו כמוצל, אך אם חלילה יאחר לבוא האור, כמו סיסמה יהיה השיר מדור לדור. אך אם חלילה יאחר לבוא האור, כמו סיסמה יהיה השיר מדור לדור. בכתב הדם והאופרת הוא נכתב, כולו שירת ציפור הדרור והמרחב, כי בין קירות נופלים שרוהו כל העם, יחדיו שרוהו ונגנים בידם. כי בין קירות נופלים שרוהו כל העם, יחדיו שרוהו ונגנים בידם. על כן אל נא תאמר דרכי האחרונה, את אור היום הסתירו שמי העננה, זה יום נחשפנו לו עוד יעל ויבוא, ומצעדנו עוד יראים אנחנו פה. זה יום נחשפנו לו עוד יעל ויבוא, ומצעדנו עוד יראים אנחנו פה.
Mul als du gehst im letzten Weg, Chotschim im Bleien etwa stellen bräue Teg. Du mir wird noch unser Reus gebeten schon, Zwetter beugt und unser Trott mir seinen Dorf. Du mir wird noch unser Reus gebeten schon, Zwetter beugt und unser Trott mir seinen Dorf.
Vom grünen Pommelein bis weißen Lein von Schnee,
Schwimmen ist mit Blut und nicht mit Blei. Sie ist nicht ein Liegel von einer Feuer auf der Frei. Das Opfer vorzeln ist in Fahne mit Gewand. Das Lied gesungen mit Maganes in die Hände. Das Opfer vorzeln ist in Fahne mit Gewand. Das Lied gesungen mit Maganes in die Hände.
Anato Marine, Darkiha Achrona, את אור היום הסתירו שמי העננה, זה יום נחשפנו לו עוד יעל ויבוא, ומצעדנו עוד יראים אנחנו פה. זה יום נחשפנו לו עוד יעל ויבוא, ומצעדנו עוד יראים אנחנו פה.
Okay. And with that, we can now go back to our regular curriculum. And once again, we'll first go back actually to before World War I, to one of the classics of the Chalutzik movement. And then we'll move progressively on until we get just about to the eve of 1948. And that'll give us an opportunity next week on what is both, as I said, Yom HaZikaron and the eve of Yom HaAtzma'ut, to look at some of the things that actually, as it were, are on the cusp of the founding of the State of Israel in 1948 and its early years. So with that, let me get us back to Okay. Okay. One of the very earliest of the Chalutzik songs, Anu Banu Arza, Livnot Ulihi Banot Ba. Simple enough, we've come back to the land of Israel, Livnot, so that we can build, Ulihi Banot, so that we can be, as it were, rebuilt in it. Again, you know that one of the themes of early Zionism was not just the restoration of the land of Israel, not even just the restoration of a Jewish polity in the land of Israel, but it was, to a large extent, the creation of a new Jew. And therefore, they thought of themselves not merely as building, but as, in a sense, being rebuilt. There are some different variations to the song. I've chosen one. As you'll see, the words at the very bottom of the right-hand side, add to livnot ulehi banot ba, to build and to be rebuilt in it. They add the words ligol, that we shall actively redeem the land. The land was fallow, the land wasn't used, and therefore by establishing agricultural settlements, they would be redeeming the land. But also again, ulehi ga'el ba, that they too, the pioneers, the chalutzim, would be redeemed through their agricultural work.
La 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 Anu banu anu banu arza livnot livnot ulehi banot ba anu banu arza livnot livnot ulehi banot ba anu olim arza ligol ulehi gael ba anu olim arza ligol ulehi gael la 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 anu olim anu olim arza ligol ligol ulehi gael ba anu olim anu olim arza ligol ligol ulehi gael ba.
Now, a curious thing about this song, as you can see, the words are attributed to Amami, folk words. That is to say that nobody is identified as actually having composed the words. And the tune is also identified as a Lachan Amami, as a folk tune. In fact, I had actually thought of using this before Pesach, when we spent a week just looking at those early songs, all the early songs of the Chalutzim that were set to Hasidic tunes, because the odds are very good that the tune to Anu Banu Arza is, like those, a Hasidic tune that was adapted for this purpose. What strengthens that is that, again, there are associations between this song, or at least the earliest appearances of this song, and personalities. In the Aliyah Rishona, in the very first Aliyah movement to Israel, who came from religious backgrounds. The earliest evidence of this song actually being sung, that is to say that the tune being put to these particular words, comes from one of the earliest, in fact, I believe the earliest settlement in the Negev. It was established, I believe, in 1911, and it was called Ruchama. And the founder of Ruchama was somebody named Tzvi Hirschfeld. Tzvi Hirschfeld was the grandson an Orthodox rabbi who might very well have come across this tune in a family setting or in a synagogue setting. And it was in Ruchama that the song was sung for the first time. that would place it as somewhere in the decade preceding the First World War. There is evidence shortly after the First World War of the song being a bit more popular. Apparently in the early 1920s, it was sung at the founding convention of the Histadrut, the workers, cooperative workers organization in Israel that is still around today, and as then is still able to bring the government to a stop by declaring a work stoppage. Okay. We move along to another oldie but goodie, which again is known by different names. The official name, the one that was given to it by the composer, by the lyricist, is Eretz Yisrael. But more often than not, it's known by the opening words in the opening stanza, and that is the Af al Pichem. Af al Pichem, in spite of that, Lamrot Hakol, and in face of all opposition, Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel, that is to say, the opposition to the Zionist movement, the opposition to Jews renewing themselves individually, collectively, and nationally in the land of Israel, in spite of all of the interference, in spite of all of the opposition, they persevere. And the perseverance is compared as follows. V'chol od dofek ba'olam lev Yisrael, as long as a Jewish heart continues to beat, V'chol od nishma ba'olam shma Yisrael, and as long as the word shma Yisrael, not necessarily as part of a liturgy, not necessarily as part of a tefillah, as part of a sidur, but simply, as it were, as an anthem of the Jewish people, right? So as long as you get Shema Yisrael, then there is still hope for Eretz Yisrael. And again, as you can see, there is a variety of, there are different versions of it. The full version, according to the poet who ought to know, it goes beyond the words that are generally sung. Picking up here, okay, Lo yecherav hanachal kol od chai hamabua. As long as the spring, the wellspring, is still producing water, then the stream that flows from it will not dry up. The wellspring, of course, being the land of Israel, the stream flowing from it being the renewal of Jewish settlement by the pioneers. Lo yishbot hayom kol or Ta'ir called O Ta'ir HaShemesh, as long as the sun is shining, right? There's still time in the day. The Cholodam Yisrael Chai, and as long as the Jewish people lives, At Eretz Yisrael, then the land of Israel remains theirs. The Cholod Yitalech B'Tochech Yardeinech, as long as the Jordan continues to flow in the land of Israel. Bishir Miyam Liyam, the Jordan, as it were, or metaphorically speaking, conducting a song that goes from sea to sea, not our sea to shining sea, but the Mediterranean to the Dead Sea or to the Kinneret. And as long as the lake of the Kinneret, the Sea of Galilee, still has its blue eye, metaphorically speaking, again, as long as the Kinneret has this blue-eyed complexion, and as long as the mountains surround it, Visharon, the plain of the Sharon and the plain of Yisrael, they are still arable, they haven't been flooded. Am Yisrael Chai, again, the people of Israel lives. And the Cholod Am Yisrael Chai, and as long as the Jewish nation lives, At Eretz Yisrael, then the land of Israel lives. Lamrot HaKol, again, in spite of all opposition, Uviyeter Az, and even with renewed vigor, Uviyeter Se'et, and with renewed vitality, Eretz Yisrael. And let's listen to this.
Thank you.
Just a word about the lyricist, about David Shimoni. He, like just about everyone we've come across so far, was born in Eastern Europe, in his case in Russia, came to Palestine at the age of 23 in the year 1909, and spent 2 years there, working as a watchman, picking oranges, touring the country. And it's mostly on those impressions that he gained during those 2 years that he lived there as a youngster that influenced his poetry, which is, again, both in Yiddish and in Hebrew. He returned to Israel after World War I, to Palestine, settled in Tel Aviv, where he was a high school teacher of Tanakh and Hebrew literature. Became a member and eventually rose to be the chairman of the Academia LaLashon HaIvrit, of the Academy of the Hebrew Language, and was a prominent member of the Israel Writers Association. And as long as we're talking about Russian-born poets, we should say a word about poetesses. This one, the words, let me put them up there on the source sheet, but I chose a different performance, one that doesn't display the words. So give me just 1 second and I will. Okay. Go. This is not our first encounter with the poetess Rachel. In fact, that's basically how she's known in Israel, as Rachel HaMishoreret, the poetess Rachel. I'm sure you can understand that around the time that she wrote this poem, which is in 1929, poetry was, at least Hebrew poetry, Hebrew literature in general, was still pretty much a male preserve. And therefore, one of the striking features of her poetry is simply the fact that it's there and that it was apparently good enough to withstand the constraints of time, so that it is still popular in Israel and still usually part of school curricula. She had a very tragic life personally, and you can sense that from the words of this poem. The poem is called Zemer Nugan, kind of like a sorrowful song. And it's addressed to a friend, or if you wish, to a lover, not necessarily in the intimate sense, but in the sense of someone with whom she has established a very strong bond. And she says to him, Hatishma koli rechoki sheli, that even though we're apart, even though we're distant, right? Can you still hear me when I call out to you? Hatishma koli, do you hear my voice? Ba'asher hincha, wherever you may be. What kind of a voice is it? Kol kore ba'oz. It's a voice that calls out firmly. Kol boche bidmi. But it's a mournful voice, a sorrowful voice, a tearful voice. Ume'al lazman. And it transcends time. Mitzaveh bracha. It's the voice of greeting that transcends time. Tevel, existence, the world. Tevel zo rabba, right? The universe is wide. Udrachim barav, and there are many paths through it. And on these paths, people meet. Nifgashot ledak. People might meet only briefly. Dak, like the word daka, for only a moment. Nifradot, and then when they part, laad. So the encounter is brief, the parting is extended. Mevakesh adam, one may seek out the other. Ach koshlot raglav, a person may want to follow the path. He may want to try to walk to find the voice that's calling out to him. But his legs are weak, they stumble. Lo yuchal limtso et asher avad. And he somehow never manages to find that which was lost. Acharon Yamai, Kvar Karov Ulai. And she says herself, writing this in 1929, that perhaps I myself, personally, am coming to the end of my time. She suffered from tuberculosis. She died from it at a young age. Kvar Karov Hayom Shel Dimot Preda. And the day on which there will be a tearful parting comes quickly. It's coming soon. Achakelecha, and she says to this loving friend, I will yet wait for you ad yichbul chayai, until my soul is extinguished, until I die. Kichakot Rachel lidoda, as Rachel waited or awaits her beloved. And I, there are different, on the source sheets you have the usual list of performances in Zemer Reshet. I happen to have personally enjoyed very much the trio called Chalonot HaGvohim, the High Windows, and I particularly like their rendition of this song. So with the words on the screen in front of you, I'll play the music in the background. You see also on the screen in front of you and on the source sheet the picture of Rachel on an Israeli 20 shekel note. You know, again, it's just a testimony to the durability of her poems. And as I said, she wrote this in 1929. She died but 2 years later in 1931 of tuberculosis. She was buried in Kibbutz Kinneret in the Galil, and buried, I don't know, physically alongside her, but in proximity to her grave is yet another famous Israeli poetess and songstress, Naomi Shemer, who specifically requested to be buried next to Rachel. But we'll be able to say more about Naomi Shemer in coming weeks when we get a little past the 1948 line. Okay, the next two songs that we have to share were both written by, written, that is to say, the lyrics and the music were written by the same person. That was Matityahu Shelem. I know when you usually see the letter Shin Lamed Mem, you think that his name must have been Shalem, but actually in this case it was Matityahu Shelem. A name that he took for himself following the unfortunate death of his father. At a somewhat young age, his father's name was Shalom Shelem, so it was his nickname. So that's he changed the family name to accommodate that. He also was from a religious family, the grandson of very religious parents, the son of parents who were already more inclined towards modernity than to tradition. And this also expresses itself in the words to his songs. And they're both on the same page in the, as you should be able to see it on the screen in front of you. The first one is called Simchuna, and the second one, much more popular and far better known, but maybe not as profound, is called Shibolet Basadeh. The words to Simchuna, Simchuna Ufirku Ha'ol are, as I just alluded to in my brief biography of Matityahu Shelem, again, particularly characteristic of this era and of many of the pioneers of this era, who were themselves either the children, or if not the children, certainly the grandchildren of very traditional and in many cases very religious parents and grandparents, who themselves were either, as I said, to be generous, more inclined to modernity, or in some cases who actually turned their backs on religion and on tradition. And yet, as we'll see, even just from a comparison of these two songs by the same composer, you know, there's still that, what people call the Das Pintele Yid, you know, that that kind of spark of Jewish tradition and religion that remains even in ostensibly the most diehard secularists. Ol and Ol, Ayin Vav Lamed, is a yoke. Pirku, lifarek, is to detach, to remove. Pirku Ha'ol means remove the yoke. Simchuna, Simchuna, rejoice, rejoice, ufirku ha'ol, and remove the yoke. What yoke is he calling upon people to remove from themselves? The phrase pirku ha'ol is itself a Mishnaic phrase. In Pirkei Avot, if you want to know, it's Perek Gimel Mishnah Hey. There is a statement attributed to one of the famous Tanaim, Rabbi Nechunya ben Hakana. And in it he says, anyone who accepts, who places upon themselves the yoke of Torah, ma'avirin mimenu ol malchut v'ol derech eretz. Then whatever political burden and whatever economic burden that person might have been carrying is eased through that person's assumption of the yoke of Torah. On the other hand, he says, kol haporek mimenu ol Torah, anybody who divests themselves of the yoke of Torah, notnin alav ol malchut va'ol derech eretz, then whatever political and economic burdens they were carrying become all the more intense. So clearly the phrase pirku ha'ol is the sense of somehow giving up on religion or on certain religious traditions. And yet look what the song is. Chag Lanu. It's a song that is written for a celebration, for a holiday. V'simcha, a day of rejoicing. Yom Lanu Gadol. So perhaps what the emphasis is on here is on the people themselves. Lanu Simcha. We're rejoicing. Yom Lanu Gadol, if it's an important day, if it's a holiday, it's not a holiday just because it says so on my religious calendar, but it's a holiday because it marks something that I have done. It's something that I'm celebrating. And then, of course, as I said, it's somewhat typical of the pioneering movement. And you can see from the continuation, and it's somewhat audacious, audacious, perhaps even bordering on heretical, right? Me'ayin yatzarnu yesh, right? He's flipping around a very typical Jewish philosophical idiom. God is called the Yotzer Yesh Me'ayin, right? God is the creator ex nihilo. He creates yesh, something, me'ayin, out of nothing. And here, according to Matityahu Shalem, it's the pioneers who have made something out of nothing. Yad Zorea V'choresh, because it was their personal labor that plowed the ground and planted it. Sela V'tzuretan, and if it required the removal of rocks or something, then they did it themselves. But this is still audacious. See if you catch the allusion here. Sela, a rock. Tzur Eitan, a flinty rock. Mayim Shefa Rav Natan, gave forth water in abundance. Clearly, this is conjuring up the image of the rock in the wilderness that from which the Bnei Yisrael were able to drink water when they were coming out of Egypt. But there, the rock wouldn't produce water until a miracle occurred. Yet here, what produced the water from the rock? Oz otzma v'choach, the strength of the pioneers. So all of these things that customarily that frum people, right, attribute to God, right, these pioneers were attributing to themselves. And then he calls upon all of his fellows, Ur, Ura, Hitoshesh, to rise up, to awaken, Toch Ma'agal Goesh, and to go out and to dance in a circle, Mishne Avod Va'amol, and if necessary, even to put in overtime. Oz Ruchenu Bal Yipol, their spirits will never flag. Ura, Ura, Ur, 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 rise up and rejoice. And here we have the music and the words, so I can share it with you so you can see them and hear it at the same time. And who will we listen to? They're always good to listen.
Thank you.
By the way, if you see on the screen, the we just listened to the first performance here by the troupe called the Givatron. The second one, if you can see next to the word Bitsua, the performance, by Lahakat HaYovel Shel HaShomer HaTzair. Not at all surprisingly, this song, this poem, at least with its explicit evocation of the idea of somehow turning one's back on, or at least giving the cold shoulder to religious tradition, is certainly something that would have appealed to the Shomer HaTzair movement. But that takes us along to the next song by the same composer, to Shibolet Basadeh. Again, let's look quickly at the words. And again, as I said, you can see, but if you read between the lines, you can get a sense of where, however much that the poet here is talking to people who, like himself, are no longer personally committed to religion, there's still the spirit of the Jewish religion and certain tradition that is, if you wish, hovering over the face of the poem. If you look at the source sheets, that's not what's on the screen right now, there's actually an English translation that I picked up online of at least the opening paragraph, but I'll just try my own off-the-cuff translation. Right? Shibboleth is a sheaf. Right? It's a sheaf of grain. Which grain it is, I'm not going to tell you right now because we're going to figure it out together. So Shibboleth Basadeh, a sheaf of grain in the field, Kor'a baruach, right? The wind is causing the stalks in the sheaf to bow down, right? To bend over, okay? Why are they bending? Me'omes gar inim kirav, right? Because of the weight of the seeds, okay? Right? So the weight of the seeds on the stalks of grain are causing them to bend in the wind, okay? Uvemerchav harim, and in the distance, right? In the mountains, Yom kvar yafuach. The day is starting. The day is rising. Okay. Hashemesh ketem v'zahav. The sun is already bright gold. Okay. Therefore, uru ha'uru. Right. Awaken. Arise. Shuru b'nei kvarim. Calling upon the inhabitants of the villages to look about them and to see kama the stalks of wheat, the grain, hein bashalakvar, clearly they're already ripened, apne hakarim, on the face of the field, kitzru, therefore it's time for the harvest, shilchu magal, get your scythe ready, et rishit hekatzir, because it is now the beginning of the harvest time. Has anybody figured out yet what the grain is and what the, and when this is, what, for what holiday this was composed? Reshit HaKatzir is the biblical, in a biblical idiom for the first day, for, actually for the second day of Pesach. It's the day on which the Omer was collected. And the Omer actually was not wheat, the Omer was barley. Because barley in the land of Israel ripens earlier than wheat. Okay? That's why the period between Pesach and Shavuot we call Sefirat HaOmer. It's apropos of what we're in now. And if you haven't counted yet, I believe last night was the 12th day of the Omer. Right? So, the Omer marks the harvest of the barley. And that goes from the second day of Pesach up until Shavuot. On Shavuot, we mark the wheat harvest. That's why Shavuot was marked by the Shtei HaLechem, right? By the loaves that were baked for the Mishkan or for the Beit HaMikdash that were made specifically of wheat. So what we have here is something that on the surface is strictly agricultural, right? It's talking to farmers, and the farmers should go out to the fields, and they should harvest the grains because they're already ripe, right? But yet, in the background, if you listen, as I say, carefully between the lines, you can hear the echoes of the religious significance of the Reshit HaKatzir. And it continues in the second stanza as well. Stesa Orim, here you go, it gave it away, right? Stesa Orim Tama, it's a field of barley. Zer chagoteret, so the field of barley, because it's ready to be harvested, it is as though it is wearing a wreath, as it were, as though it's being crowned for a holiday. And of course, the holiday is Pesach. Shefa yevul uvracha, an abundance of yield, an abundance of blessing. Likrat bo hakotzrim, because the grains themselves are awaiting the harvesters. Bizohar mazheret, it's shining as it were. Cheresh la omer mechaka, it's waiting silently for the omer to be cut. Havu, therefore, hanifu, wave the sheaves. Nirulachem nir, right, dig about them. Chag lakama, because it's a holiday to celebrate the ripening of the barley. Again, eight reshit hakatzir, kitzru, right, harvest, shulchu magal, get those scythes ready. Eight reshit hakatzir, because it's the time for the beginning of the barley harvest. And since they're pretty much all the same, why don't we listen to the Makelah of the religious kibbutz Be'erot Yitzchak. Okay, since not to leave us with a sense of just longing, but a sense of, to add to it a sense of anticipation, I thought to conclude today with one final song. There are actually two on the source sheet, because I hadn't really, when I planned it out, I had forgotten that it was Yom HaShoah, and therefore the preview that we had of the Shir HaPartizanim will force us to simply delay the last song on this week's source sheet to next week, which is perfectly okay, because it's a song of Hein Efshar, a song of possibility, which is certainly characteristic of the land and the state of Israel on the 15th of May of 1948. But we'll end today with the song called Ha'amini Yom Yavo, where one hopeful person, pioneer, turns to another and says, don't worry, the day, that is a day of redemption, a day of salvation, a day of success, will come in spite of all of the dark days that might have come previously. Let me again just put the words up for you. They're on the source sheet, but I will put them up here on the screen as well. Here we go. And while you follow with the words, as you can say, Hayom Achoti Milchamtenu. Somebody turns to a young woman, perhaps to his girlfriend. He refers to her poetically as my sister. And he says, today Milchamtenu, today is our war. Lachen Rachok Ani Mikan. And because, implication, I'm a soldier, right? I'm not at home with you. I'm at a distance. Tachog Ignat Kishatenu B'mitbachenu HaKatan. I'm looking forward to our being reunited at home in our little kitchen, in our mitbach. On the komisha becharatihu, and on the place that you will have set for me, tasimi yayin lo kosid, place a full glass of wine. Tir'i, pretend, ki ilu ze anihu, as though I were seated there with you, yosheva itach kemo tamid, as we have in the past. Meaning, if there's a longing for two people to be reunited, they're being kept apart on account of the war. And then the theme, ha'amini yom yavo, believe, have trust, the day, that is to say, the day of our independence will come. Tov yihye, it will be good. Mavtiach lach, I promise you. L'chabek otach avo, and I'll be able to once again come and to embrace you. V'hakol asia lach, and I'll tell you everything that happened to me in the interim. And here is the...
אחותי מלחמתנו, לכן רחוק אני מכאן, תחוגינה.
They have the words on the screen, I didn't realize.
במטבחנו הקטן, על מקומי.
Okay, have a quick look at the chat. The sources. Chalonot HaGvoim, Israel's first pop group. I don't know enough about the history of pop groups. They're certainly one of the earliest ones, yes. Arik Einstein was one of the three singers that we saw in that clip, yes. Rachel and Naomi Shemer. Somebody was there, and so I knew that they were in proximity to each other. But if they're actually right next to each other, I'm sure that that's cause for considerable, I'm sure for them it was important.
When was Ha'amini Yom Yavo written? You know.
Pardon me.
When was Ha'amini Yom Yavo written?
It's on the source of 1948.
Thank you.
Yeah, and it's about soldiers who were away, arguably during the Milchemet HaShichrur. I'll probably replay it at the beginning of next week with a different version of it, one that's a little more peppy. I thought that this was good because it was a somewhat slow, as I said, it was more a sense of longing.
Right.
We'll hear it next week to a faster tempo. It'll sound a little more successful. Yes, exactly. Okay, there we go. So thank you, Ugol, everybody. And as I said, next week being Yom HaZikaron HaLalei Tzahal and Erev Yom HaTzmaut, we'll spend the time looking at some of the things that I know some of you have been asking for every week, Shir HaPalmach, songs like that. We'll take a look back at some of the unfortunately tragic steps that we had to take along the way to the establishment of the State of Israel, but then move into something a little more celebratory as well. So again, thank you all so much for joining us, and see you next week.